Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Arizona and Immigration Preemption Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 25, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Arizona versus United States. The question in this case was whether certain provisions of Arizona Senate Bill 1070 involving immigration activities and offenses were preempted by federal immigration laws. The federal government challenged four provisions of SB 1070. In an opinion delivered by Justice Kennedy, the court held by a vote of 5-3 that three of these four provisions, sections 3, 5C, and 6, were preempted by federal law. With respect to the fourth provision, section 2, the court held that the federal government had not yet demonstrated a sufficient basis for preemption. The Chief Justice, as well as Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, and Sotomayor, joined the majority opinion. Justices Scalia, Thomas, and Alito filed opinions concurring in part and dissenting in part. Justice Kagan took no part in the consideration or the decision of the case. To discuss the case, we have Margaret Stock, who is counsel to Lane Powell, PC, and John Eastman, who is the Henry Salvatore Professor of Law and Community Service at Chapman University School of Law and founding director of the Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Eastman will begin.
So the court's decision resolves some preliminary matters in the legal challenges to Arizona's SB 1070. It's important for people to understand what was at issue before the court and what remains to be resolved. The Department of Justice had challenged the entirety of SB 1070, sought a preliminary injunction to prevent it from going into effect. The lower courts, both the District Court and the Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, allowed most of the provisions of the statute to go into effect and enjoined preliminarily four provisions. Those were the four provisions that were at issue before the Supreme Court. Section 2B, which is the so-called check your papers provision that authorizes or even mandates that local law enforcement in Arizona, whenever they have lawfully detained or stopped somebody, ascertain their immigration status when they have reasonable suspicion, not based on race or ethnic background, but other reasonable suspicion to think they may be here in the country illegally. Section 3 created a state law crime for failure to carry the immigration papers that are required by federal law. The penalties under Section 3 paralleled the penalties for the federal crime. Section 5C made it a state law crime to seek work in violation of federal law. But the federal statutory scheme only provides criminal sanctions on the employers. Only civil sanctions are available for employees. And Section 6 authorized Arizona law enforcement to make warrantless arrests whenever they had probable cause to believe that an illegal immigrant had committed an act that rendered them removable under the federal immigration laws. The Supreme Court looked at those four decisions and unanimously, by an 8-0 vote, reversed the injunction of Section 2B, or in other words, upheld Section 2B that authorizes or mandates local law enforcement to check the status of immigrants when they are otherwise lawfully stopped. It did, however, affirm the injunction against the other three provisions, Section 3, Section 5C, and Section 6, contending that those provisions were all impliedly preempted by the federal statutory scheme, either by field preemption, which is the doctrine that says Congress has so comprehensively occupied the field in a particular area as to leave no room for state action in the area, or what's called obstacle preemption, that somehow the state's enforcement, though not in direct conflict, stand as an obstacle to the enforcement of the federal immigration policies. So that's the description of what happened. Now, the majority decision on Section 2B, the 8-0 decision, does raise a lot of red flags about how that might be implemented and suggests that there may be ways that it could be implemented constitutionally, but also ways that it may be implemented unconstitutionally. For example, if it turns out in practice that there's no way to implement Section 2B without racial profiling or ethnic background profiling, Justice Kennedy seems to suggest that that would clearly be unconstitutional. Or if there's no way to implement it without imposing additional detention on the person who is reasonably suspected of being in the country illegally while that investigation is occurring, the delay in detention might also create constitutional problems. But the court unanimously deferred to the state of Arizona and to the state courts to work out whether that provision can be interpreted and implemented in a way that meets constitutional muster. The other three provisions, though, are the ones that split either 6-2 or 5-3, and there are only 8 votes here because Justice Elena Kagan was recused from the case. She was Solicitor General of the United States when those litigations were begun and therefore was involved in the case and needed to recuse herself. Leave it for another day whether the same exact rule ought to apply in the health care challenge. But these other provisions, which created the split on the court, either 6-2 or 5-3, turned on the court's assessment of these implied preemption doctrines. And they're fairly complicated, and increasingly the court has trended away from implied preemption doctrines, either field preemption or obstacle preemption, recognizing, and I think quite rightly, that ascertaining either one of those requires an interpretive methodology by the court into Congress's unspoken intent that it's always a dangerous thing. Justice Kennedy's opinion, lead opinion for the court on those issues, though, bucks that trend and it fully embraces the old both field preemption and obstacle preemption doctrines in order to strike down Arizona statutes. And that drew both a pretty strong dissent from Justice Alito and from Justice Thomas and a broad-based dissent about the nature of state sovereignty from Justice Scalia. And I think those are the issues that are the most interesting. But for the not faint of heart, got to be a real constitutional geek and deep embedded into the preemption doctrine and its nuances to fully appreciate what was going on in those aspects of the case. So what does it mean for Arizona and the enforcement of its immigration law? Many of the provisions, like I said, of the law were not preliminary enjoined. They were not before the court. They went into effect back when the law was passed in 2010 and remain in effect. And some of those are rather significant. The states can, for example, have a state law crime, arrest people if they stop and pick up migrant workers, day laborers, if doing so impedes traffic. They can make it a state law crime to transport or harbor illegal immigrants. They can impound cars that are used for the transportation of illegal immigrants. A number of tools in addition to Section 2B that appear to be authorized, and both Arizona and the number of the states have been waiting in the wings with their own bills to see what the Supreme Court was going to do here, may have some, though not all, of the tools that were available to them before yesterday to try and address the consequences of illegal immigration within their states. And those consequences are rather dramatic. Justice Kennedy, in his opinion, points out several of, in Arizona, for example, almost 6% of the population is unauthorized or illegally present in the state. Points to a study that in Arizona's most populous county, they were responsible for a disproportionate amount of serious crime. Unauthorized aliens in Maricopa County, which includes Phoenix, comprised just under 9% of the population, but were responsible for almost 22% of the felonies in the county. Justice Kennedy describes this as an epidemic of crime, safety risks, serious property damage, and environmental problems associated with the influx of illegal immigration across the Mexican border. These things are serious, and one of the things we're going to have to look at going forward is how effective can the states be in trying to police the internal effects of illegal immigration within their borders and still stay on the constitutional side of the line that the courts have now drawn. And with that, I'll pass it over to Margaret.
Thank you very much, John. I agree with everything you've said. I do think, in fact, that Arizona has faced a very serious problem and that it passed SB 1070 in an attempt to deal with that problem. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court of the United States has now given a resounding no to state attempts to do any kind of serious state regulation of immigration. And although John's correct that there's plenty of the law that wasn't at issue in this case that still can go forward, the court, in fact, has created a pretty grave setback to those who would attempt to give teeth to state immigration regulations, basically saying that this is a matter of federal law. It's true that the system is a mess and that the federal government hasn't done what it's supposed to do, but it's really up to Congress to be regulating immigration and not to the states. So this decision is going to have a wide-ranging effect on the states that have similar laws, the copycat states they call them. Their laws presumably will no longer be constitutional if they're similar to Arizona's. It's also very, very important to point out that, as John said correctly, this is up at the Supreme Court on a preliminary injunction against 4 provisions of the law. And the preliminary injunction has now been upheld against 3 of those sections, and they're the 3 sections that actually had teeth. The one section on which the court was unanimous and sent back down, they didn't quite uphold it. What they said was it's not facially unconstitutional, and so we're going to send it back to the lower court, and now the lower court can consider challenges to the law as applied. So the fight is going to continue here. It's not the end of the case. It just means that challenges to how the law is applied can now go forward. Or in other words, Arizona can now try to apply the part of the law that is possibly constitutional. As John mentioned, if Arizona does so in an unconstitutional manner, the law could be enjoined again. So the fight is now going to shift back to the lower federal court. And that is where the problem is going to occur, because in the Supreme Court's majority opinion, they said that Arizona could enforce Section 2B. And again, Section 2B is the part of SB 1070 that says, for any lawful stop, detention, or arrest made by a law enforcement official in the enforcement of any other law or ordinance where reasonable suspicion exists that the person is an alien and is unlawfully present in the United States, a reasonable attempt shall be made when practicable to determine the immigration status of the person. That's the law that they said Arizona can now attempt to enforce. But of course, the problem here is going to be a couple of things. First, this is the only provision of the law that doesn't actually have any teeth. It's not a criminal provision. It just says you can check somebody's status. And of course, the states had already been doing that, but the courts now laid out some specific guidelines for how to carry out this part of the law, and it's going to be very difficult for law enforcement to follow those guidelines. They're going to need very, very careful training. The prior training that Arizona law enforcement got on this particular law, SB 1070, now has to be thrown out and revised. Arizona is going to have to retrain all its police officers. And basically what they're going to have to do is say to the law enforcement, you can check people's immigration status if you lawfully stop them, detain them, arrest them. But you have to be really careful not to violate the provision of the law about racial profiling. You have to be careful not to detain anyone as the result of a check. You can detain them for another offense, but not because of an immigration check. You have to be careful not to fail to release anyone pending a check. If you detain them longer than necessary for the purpose that you originally stopped them for, that can create a constitutional rights violation. You have to be very careful not to apply this law in some manner that's going to cause people to argue that you're applying it differently to people from one place rather than another. So it's a bit of a no-win for Arizona. They're going to have to be very, very careful, according to the Supreme Court's majority opinion, in the way that they apply the law now. And then the problem becomes, if they do find out the person's not authorized, they do the check, what do they do now? If they hold the person and the federal government doesn't come and get them, they've got a problem. They could try to charge them with some other state crime, but the state crimes that were listed in SB 1070 that they could have charged them with have now been tossed out as unconstitutional. If they make a mistake, they're going to get sued, and federal law allows them to get sued, Title 28, United States Code, Section 1983. And then, of course, people can get attorney's fees under Section 1988. If they make too many mistakes, when they're stopping people under this provision, the rest of the statute will get enjoined as unconstitutional, as enforced. So it's not exactly a win for Arizona. It's going to be a significant administrative challenge for them to go forward with just this part of the law and do so in a manner that is constitutional. Interestingly, the reason this is happening and the reason Arizona's got this mess on its hands is a result of the fact that for more than 100 years, there has been no due process in immigration proceedings. The federal government has basically said, we don't want to give people due process in immigration proceedings, so we're not going to make them criminal. We're going to make them civil, because that way we don't have to worry about giving people lawyers and advising them of their constitutional rights and giving them a whole bunch of due process protections. So the federal government has made most immigration proceedings civil, and that's now come back to bite Arizona, because that's why Arizona's law ultimately failed. The Supreme Court said, look, the federal government has these civil penalties. You can't turn around and criminalize these things under state law. And of course, it turns out that being in the United States with an expired immigration status isn't a crime at all. It's just a civil violation under federal immigration law. The majority rejected a theory that some folks had posited to try to get these state laws passed. And this is the mirror image theory, the idea that you can pass a state law that mirrors a federal law and that will make it constitutional. Majority didn't directly say we reject the mirror image theory, but their opinion implies, as Professor Eastman said, that it's the old preemption theory back again, and we're not accepting this new mirror image theory. So that no longer will be a theory that can underlie these state laws, and so the copycat state laws in six states that have had these sort of laws are going to fail. And again, the only provision upheld is the one that doesn't have teeth, and is very, very difficult to implement. So I think now we're left with the states have a much more limited role in immigration than people thought might be the case, and the immigration fight now goes back to Congress. The court was pretty clear that although there are serious problems in the United States with immigration, the fault lies with Congress, which has dodged its responsibility to fix these problems. I'd also point out in closing here, before turning things back over to John, that the court was in a little bit of a dilemma here because the Ninth Circuit had enjoined all four sections of SB 1070 that were at issue. And so if Justice Roberts did not join the other four justices, then the Ninth Circuit's decision would have been upheld. Since Justice Kagan had recused herself, you would have had a 4-4 split on the court. But what that leaves us with is a 5-3 decision saying that three sections of the law are in fact unconstitutional. A preliminary injunction stays in place, and the other one just goes back to see if it can be applied in a manner that is constitutional. Thank you. Back to you, John.
Yeah, the one thing that we haven't talked about yet is the Department of Justice and the President's argument here that their enforcement discretion itself would preempt the state law enforcement priorities that were different. The court pretty uniformly, this is part of the unanimous decision, rejected that. As Justice Alito noted in his opinion concurring on this point, the United States argument that Section 2B is preempted, not by any federal statute or regulation, but simply by the executive's current enforcement policy, is an astounding assertion of federal executive power that the court rightly rejects. And that was the essence of the department's broad challenge here. And so by the majority focusing on preemption doctrines and the intent of Congress, they pretty clearly rejected that claim that the executive department's just enforcement decisions and discretion could preempt state law. If the state laws were consistent with congressional policy, the executive's contrary enforcement decisions would not preempt it. Now, that means that Congress, if it chooses, has some room here to respond to the Supreme Court's decision. And I'll give one example. The failure to carry immigration papers, which is a violation of federal law, and it's a criminal offense under federal law. Arizona made it a criminal defense under state law to make sure that these things were getting enforced, even if the Department of Justice and the executive branch of the national government were not enforcing them. Congress is silent on whether it is intended to preclude state enforcement of that statute. Justice Kennedy, writing for the majority, infers that there was preemption, that Congress intended to preempt state efforts in this area by some combination of, as I said, field and obstacle preemption. But Congress could easily say, no, we recognize that the states have a role here. Similarly, with the provisions of Section 5C, where Arizona made it a crime to seek work for which you were not lawfully allowed to seek, whereas the federal statute imposes criminal sanctions only on the employers. The inference that Justice Kennedy drew was by imposing criminal sanctions only on the employers, Congress intended not to have any criminal sanctions on the employees. But of course, Congress could have equally intended by that silence to leave the matter of whether to impose criminal sanctions with the states in their normal regulation of the employment relationships within the state. And so it's always hard to divine Congress's meaning from their silence. That's why the court has been backing away from those preemption doctrines. But if Congress believes that the court misread its silence on the prior move, it could easily say the states are authorized to impose or not impose additional penalties in this area as they see fit in their efforts to exercise their police powers to vindicate the safety concerns within their states. So there's much at issue here that Congress could take up if it chose, and the president's non-enforcement decisions will not themselves preempt state law. And then there's one final piece of this, and it's rather an extraordinary reference by Justice Scalia in his opinion to events that transpired just last week with the president unilaterally choosing not to enforce parts of the mandatory removal proceedings for people who are here unlawfully unauthorized, and in fact authorizing work permits for them, I think in violation of federal law. That's a very complicated overlap area, but Justice Scalia referenced it. And I think, and I've not confirmed this yet, but my understanding is that the administration yesterday, after the decision came down, revoked all of the existing state cooperation agreements, or 287G agreements, that allowed for greater cooperation between states and federal government in the enforcement of federal immigration law. So that's going to provoke another confrontation, I think, with the states on how we enforce the immigration laws. really stem the tide of these consequences that Justice Kennedy talked about in his opinion on crime and property rights and environmental concerns and what have you, and particularly in border states like Arizona that are suffering so much of the brunt of this process. And so we're not done with this issue yet. There remains a lot of legal and political wrangling, of course, to try and figure out how to resolve these very severe issues in a way that protects lawful residents, protects against crime, but also ensures the constitutional rights for everybody.
Well, I just say very briefly that I disagree with John slightly in terms of what he was quoting the dissenting opinions, and it looks clearly that the majority thinks that it's up to Congress to provide the executive with the resources. If Congress fails to provide the executive with the resources necessary, then that's Congress's problem, but it doesn't mean that the states can step in and do things that conflict with federal law. So I don't read it quite as harshly as John does in terms of its claimed disagreement with what the President and the Secretary of Homeland Security are attempting to do in terms of their enforcement priorities. It looks to me like it's a resounding endorsement of the idea that the executive branch needs to work with Congress and they rule in the immigration field and the states cannot interfere with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.